This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Greater Ulumuda is a 160,000-hectare forest located in East Kedah. Rich in biodiversity, it's also a main source of raw water for South Kedah and Penang. Despite its undeniable importance, though, the Ulumuda forest remains unprotected, despite calls that the whole area be given permanent protection by declaring it as a state park. And helping us to understand the importance of Ulumuda to our daily lives and our future generations as well are Professor Dr. Chan Ngai Weng. He is the president of Water Watch Penang, and Professor Dr. Ahimsa Campos Artheth. He's a professor in tropical conservation ecology and the principal investigator at the management and ecology of elephants, or MEEM for short. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Hello, good.
All right, lovely to have you. So just so everyone knows, Professor Chan is joining us all the way from Penang on the line, and Ahimsa is, of course, in the studio. So do bear with us in terms of sound quality and things like that. So Ahimsa, I mean, just walk us through Ulumuda. I know you've done field work there. Tell us about the fauna found there. I know that it's home to more than 130 vulnerable animal species. You know, what can we find there?
Well, Ulumuda is a fascinating forest. It's in Kedah, in the northwest of Peninsula Malaysia. It's about 1,600 square kilometers of tropical rainforest. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly rich in big animals. You know, that is my area of speciality.
Of course, megafauna.
The megafauna. So then, yeah, we have animals like elephants. We have other large herbivores, including tapirs, of course. Very charismatic, very unique to this part of the world. And we have big carnivores, including the clouded leopards, and other cats. Lot of interesting bird species. Mm-hmm. For example, we have the 10 hornbill species.
All 10
that we can see in Malaysia. They occur there in Ulumuda, including the plain pouch hornbill that is very rare. Only happens in the very north in Ulumuda and Balun. So it's a very interesting place from the point of view of wildlife.
Mm-hmm. And I think something very interesting or particular thing that's important about Ulumuda is that it also has a lot of salt lakes.
Yeah, so then it contains many places where animals go to eat the soil for the minerals. There are several very well-known salt lakes that is very interesting. Some of them have hot water, so they have different minerals. And yeah, it makes Ulumuda quite special for these big animals.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, okay, for people who don't understand what the significance of having a salt lake is, and I think that's particularly, it makes an excellent habitat for large mammals, in particular the megafauna.
Yeah. So then animals that consume plants, herbivores, they are deficient in many minerals because the plant tissue has less of these minerals than animal tissue. So for example, tigers don't have these problems because they will eat deer directly and they obtain all the minerals. But animals like elephants or tapirs will be deficient on these things, mm-hmm. so they need to compensate somehow. In some places, the compensation comes from the ocean spray that comes on the surface of the leaves, for example. But here, with so much rainfall and with the lack of wind, you know, in the tropical rainforest, there is no wind. There's, you know, basically it's the dense. Plants are missing all these salts. So animals will need places where they can eat these salts. Mm-hmm. So often they will do by eating soil or drinking some special water. And those become very important points for wildlife conservation. So even though it's a very small area, many animals will come from far away and use these places. So they become very important in terms of protection. We need to protect these places.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the megafauna that can be found there. And I know there's some very rare species besides the one that you mentioned, mm-hmm. some that potentially haven't even been seen in a while.
Yeah. Ulumuda was the last place in Peninsula Malaysia where the banteng was seen. Mm-hmm. And this is the Bos javanicus. I think it was well known to be there in the 1930s, and then it was unclear until when it was present. People think maybe until the 1980s, 1990s. So I think it's a very good place to think about reintroductions. Mm-hmm. The banteng has become very rare in most of Southeast Asia, and I think it would be a great place to think about, you know, kind of mid-long-term rewilding or restoration of animal populations.
Okay. And I mean, your favorite animal, if I dare say that, is of course elephants, right? I mean, how are the elephant populations doing in the Ulumuda area?
We are working on that right now. We know that there are elephants, that we see them quite easily.
Easily, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting place to see wildlife because, you know, you move around in a boat and you see things from the boat, which if the engine is off, you're very silent, and it's a very good place just to see wildlife. And one of our students, Oi Chin, is now studying the elephant population in Lumuda. She's using DNA capture recapture to estimate how many elephants we have there.
Amazing.
So in a few months, we'll be able to know how many elephants we have and other things like the sex ratio and other things.
Okay. And I guess you're doing the usual thing of checking the poop and doing the usual tracking systems.
What we do is she's doing transects with two different groups in the field. And then whenever they find fresh dung, has to be relatively fresh, they collect the DNA from the outside part of the dung. Mm-hmm. And then this goes to the lab and then it's identifying genetically.
And I imagine for having these salt licks there as well, it makes it slightly easier to kind of figure out where you might find.
Yes.
Am I right?
Well, methodologically, we do transects.
Okay.
So then she has to move around in the landscape, and then she has to do like 1 kilometer transects.
Okay.
So it's very important that she moves and she covers as much area as possible from the forest.
Okay, all right. And Dr. Chan, sorry, we've been ignoring you for a while here, but let's talk about the water that comes from the Ulumuda forest. It's used domestically, it's used in industry and for agriculture, am I correct?
Yes. Actually, the Ulumuda area, 162,000 hectares, it is divided into 8 forest reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So forest reserves being forest reserves, I think they can be easily degazetted for production forests and all sorts of development.
Mm-hmm.
So hence logging has been going on for a while now. So the forest acts as a water catchment for the 3 states, not just Kedah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Kedah 100% depends on this catchment.
Of course.
But 80% of the water from Penang also comes from the Sungai Muda, and the Sungai Muda flows from this catchment, and also Perlis. I think maybe about 50% of the water used in Perlis is also from this catchment. So this catchment is very, very important.
And the water also irrigates Kedah's vast rice fields, am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, Kedah is the rice bowl, producing more than 50% of Malaysia's rice. So if you don't have the Ulumuda forest catchment, you will not have the Sungai Muda and you will lose the irrigation and we will lose the food.
And correct me if I'm wrong, raw water that originates from Ulumuda, that's also essential for double cropping in these rice fields, you know, not just Kedah but Perlis and Penang as well.
Yes, absolutely, because without irrigation, we can only plant 1 crop a year. But with irrigation, now they are planting 2 crops. Actually, if they do more intensive farming, some countries can even go to the extent of 3 crops per year. But I think for the Kedah area, at the moment, it's only 2.
And just in terms of the supply of fresh water contained in the forest reserve, I mean, how much of it actually goes to serve the local communities? I mean, which areas rely on Ulumuda for water supply and for what purposes in general?
Okay, in terms of water supply, I said before that 80% of the water supply for Penang is from the Muda River. We actually pump the water in Lahat from Lahatiang, which is downstream of the Sungai Muda, into a water treatment plant to get it treated before being piped under the sea, submarine. It's actually under the bridge to Penang Island.
Okay.
So 80% of the water of Penang Island comes from the Sungai Muda. So if we lose Ulumuda, Penang will be in big trouble. So would Kedah as well as Perlis.
Yeah, so that was a question I had. Should the clean water supply at Ulumuda become insufficient, are there actually alternative water supplies to these current dependent areas?
For Kedah, I think no, because they are dependent 100% from this river. Maybe one or two of the smaller rivers may be able to supply maybe less than 20% of the water of Kedah.
Sure.
And Perlis also, I think they don't have many big rivers, so they are quite reliant on this. As for Penang, I think we are thinking about buying water from Perak. Another alternative is to look at desalination because we are surrounded by seas. But of course, this will be very, very expensive and the water price will go up tremendously. Not to mention, you know, you don't know what's the long-term effect of drinking desalinated water.
And, you know, I think another major issue, especially in water catchment areas when there's things like logging, for example, is soil runoff. Am I correct?
Yes. Well, if you have logging and the logging is not sustainable, even if it's sustainable, I mean, you know, they carry out some practices, there will still be some, you know, sediments that will be washed into the river. And these sediments will make the river cloggy and to get your normal teh tarik river, you know.
Yeah.
So actually, there are many cases whereby high sedimentation has forced some treatment plants to close for a while in many parts of the country, not just in this area.
Right, and I think the whole process of treating this water to become safe again, it's very expensive. It's very well. It's kind of like unnecessary if you could just protect it in the first place.
Yes, absolutely. If your water is so dirty, full of sediments, then the cost of production will go up.
Of course.
Not to mention, it will stop your treatment plant for a few days for you to clean up before you can start again. You know.
Yeah.
So it's very problematic. If you have clean water, then you know the cost of production will go down and everything will be okay.
Yeah, and I think the problem is as well, you know, a lot of people don't understand where their water actually comes from. You know, it just comes nicely from a tap. We don't pay much for it. People don't make that connection between the fact that the water that you're getting is coming from these forests.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, the modern kind of living, we are so detached from nature. You think that you hardly think that, you know, you just go to the tap and you get a water. But actually, 97% of our water is from rivers.
Yep.
Because we have a lot of rivers, and rivers, getting the water from river is the cheapest and easiest way of abstracting compared to groundwater or desalination or any other form. So I think we should get, you know, some education to the grassroots, to the people and so on, to protect our rivers.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the threats that Ulumuda is facing. So we have, of course, I'm guessing the usual suspects, you know, deforestation, logging, illegal logging, but also legal logging as well. I mean, just walk me through what are the problems. Ahimsa, if you could help me with that.
Yeah. So I think logging itself is a threat, particularly when it comes to the water resources. As Prof. Chan was saying, even sustainable logging or proper legal logging will have consequences for the quality of the water. We have also poaching. Poaching is a very serious threat in all the forests in Peninsula Malaysia, and we know that it's happening in Ulumuda. We see signs of poachers, and so then there's an attempt right now. The ministry, cuts, and you know the minister, Dr. Xavier, has been pushing for dealing with poaching, but still we need to take much more serious measures. I think finally the third threat is the unsustainable development. So then things from unsustainable ecotourism or, you know, poorly designed ecotourism, as well as things like the Belt and Road Initiative. There are plans to have some infrastructure happening through this area. So all these things are threat for Ulumuda.
Mm-hmm. And so that's also, I mean, not just a threat to the fauna, it's, you know, you're concerned with, but to the water supplies and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ulumuda is, when we talk about the forest itself, then it's when we have the ecosystem, the wildlife, and all these things. But actually, this forest produces the water for such a big, you know, basin, such big areas, as Prof. Chang was saying, for these three estates. So, the damage on this forest will have much further effect in all these people, all these places.
Mm-hmm. So currently, you know, maybe both of you can help me with this. What sort of protection is offered to, I guess, the Greater Ulumuda Forest and the different forest reserves? I mean, is there any protection at all at the moment?
If I may say, I think the 8 forest reserves that make up the Ulumuda area, they are all under forest reserve.
Okay.
And various categories. Some are protected forest reserves, some are production forest reserves, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said before, forest reserve, even though the word reserve is there, but it's very easy to degazette it. The state exco just need to sign. And, you know, they don't even have to hold a public forum and so on. So if the state exco were to sign to degazette, only they would know. They don't have to go to a public forum. But if we were to gazette it as a water catchment or a state park or national park, then they would have to pass a law. So that would make it more difficult for them to degazette or for anybody to degazette. The protection will be much better. In that sense.
Yeah, so that's what we have been working on. So then Prof. Chan and Water Watch Penang and ourselves, MIM, we have been working on developing a common vision for the protection of Ulumuda. So in the last 1 year, we have been holding a number of workshops and events to talk with different stakeholders, to gather their vision, their opinions, their preferences. And it's quite clear that what people think is that the best way or the best thing for Ulumuda for the future will be to become a state park.
Okay.
So that I think there's very general consensus across different sectors and different stakeholders. So now our intention is how we can move from being a vision into being a reality, making Ulumuda a state park.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about something like how Royal Belum Temenggor is a state park. I'd be looking at something like that.
Correct. And actually, some people are proposing to do something similar like the Royal Ulumud State Park. At this moment, it's an idea, but it's something that we need to work on.
Okay. And are you engaging with all these different stakeholders, Prof Chan, as well as Ahimsa? Are you, you know, meeting all the different stakeholders, and are you coming up with any sort of, I suppose, solutions, viable solutions that you think might actually work?
Okay, like Prof. Ahimsa has said, we have already actually touched base with them. We invited all the stakeholders that we can identify. Of course, not all of them turn up at our two workshops.
And how rude!
Because of you know their busy schedule or whatnot.
Okay.
But eventually, we will engage most of them. Mm-hmm. We are actually still making attempts to see the Menteri Besar and to work with other stakeholders like the forestry and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I did not mention just now is other than the forest reserve, the water resources, as well as the biodiversity that has been explained by Prof. Ahimsa, I think the forest is very important as a sort of climate control.
Yes,
because
of course.
A lot of carbon dioxide in the air is captured in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
But if you deforest, then there will be no more trees to capture the carbon dioxide.
Yes.
From the process of photosynthesis, carbon dioxide is converted into tissues of the plants and stored in the forest. But if you don't have the forest, the carbon dioxide will stay in the air. Then, of course, this global warming process will become more intense. And as you know now, we are already experiencing all these problems already. So, in fact, I think many countries are selling their carbon, you know, this forest is replaced for not cutting down the forest. I think some Norwegian countries, Denmark, and so on, they are buying, you know, they are giving money to some poor countries with the forest to keep their forest.
Yeah.
We call this a carbon trading.
Yeah, Ulumud is a textbook example of how it pays off to do conservation. So then, by protecting this forest, by protecting the catchment areas, by protecting the trees and the wildlife and a healthy ecosystem, we are protecting so many ecosystem services for people. So people will benefit tremendously from keeping this forest.
Exactly.
When we cut in this forest, we are producing a small amount of economic benefit in the very short term, for very few people. So then I think it's a real no-brainer. When we talk about conservation, this is a perfect example of how we should be pushing for protection as a way to do a sensible financial management of our resources.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I personally am very optimistic that very soon we'll be able to get Ulumuda protected in something like the state park.
Mm-hmm. But you do have to contend with logging concessionaires, who, when Kedah Menteri Besar announced last October that it would stop logging at the Ulumuda Forest Reserve, they did ask, how are we going to be compensated? Because, they cancelled all the licenses, etc., right?
Yep.
So I know Kedah has tried, like what Prof Chan said, going to international agencies, looking for programs such as the reduction of CO2 emissions program, those sorts of things. Do you think that is something, a way forward, I suppose?
For me, I think if they explore this area, our forest is as good as any other forest in the world. I mean, if Norwegians can buy from, other countries, they can also, look at Malaysia.
Yep.
So that is one of the areas that we can look into.
Mm-hmm.
But the others are maybe, the three northern states should come to the table, including the federal government, to see how we can, compensate Kedah. Not really compensate, to see how Kedah can find money elsewhere rather than cutting down the forest. And we are quite reasonable people. I mean, the Greater Ulumuda area is a huge area. So as far as we are concerned, if they don't touch the areas near to the water catchment, they can do sustainable logging at the fringes away from, the water catchment areas.
Okay.
I think if they don't create too much trouble, they don't destroy the forest, they don't destroy the water catchment, then we are actually okay with that.
Okay.
I think it's a very recurrent topic when it comes to conservation, where the money comes from. Yeah, it's always the money thing, but in a country like Malaysia, which, again, I always insist is a very rich country. We are very rich as a society and in terms of the resources we have. So then it's not that we don't have money. It's just our priorities are not right. And also we have some governance issues in terms of who pays for what.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that in Malaysia we have the issue of federal and state government jurisdictions, who is responsible for what.
Exactly.
And then states they have a problem is that they don't have sources of revenue. They're very limited by the constitution of how they can make money.
Exactly.
And this makes them, or this kind of, they're cornered to produce money often by overexploiting natural resources. So for me, one of the key priorities, and it's not only about Tulu Muda, it's in general, to do good management of our natural resources in Malaysia, is to identify new ways for states to generate income. Mm-hmm. And there are other ways to do that. There are ways like, for example, using fiscal transfers in which the federal government can transfer money to the state governments based on the amount of forest they have or the quality of the forest, or we can transfer some of the income taxes that right now the states don't make any money out of it. But we need to really generate incentives for the states to protect forests, because right now there are none, and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you're saying the federal government does need to come up with some, I guess, frameworks, I suppose, to compensate
absolutely.
The state.
Yeah. So it's not a matter of giving some money here and there. It's about creating a framework that is sustainable and that has the right incentives and the incentives mm-hmm. to make conservation aligned with what the states can do and want to do.
But what about the problem of illegal poaching, which you brought up mm-hmm. earlier? I mean, you know, that is a constant problem because there's not enough money to I suppose, weaponize people or, you know, to protect these areas. And they are very vulnerable. It is a very, it's huge, right? It's huge and it's easily...
I think Malaysia has an interesting history in which when most of Southeast Asia was being really poached everywhere by many people, in Malaysia, it was not happening, probably because of the communist insurgency. So then Malaysia came into the late 90s, early 2000s, with a lot of wildlife in the forest, mm-hmm. when really in Indochina, all the parts in the forest were very defaunted. So I think it took a long time for people to realize that this is a real threat and that this is happening. And I think I have been in Malaysia for the last 8 years. Since all this period, we have seen a lot of presence of poachers in the forest. Very often are non-Malaysians. Mm. So there's people who come from Indochina, from Thailand. And I think only recently people have really accepted that this is a matter of national security, that this is a real threat and that should be stopped. I think once that this becomes a priority, the resources can be found. And Dr. Shevi just made an announcement about, you know, the war on poaching to protect the Malayan tigers. And I think that's the way to go. I think we need to bring the army, we need to bring the police, and we need to really have more people on the ground patrolling this forest.
Yeah, because we've seen programs like in Nepal, for example, working, right, to protect the tiger species there, you know, and that's really heavily arming them, really giving... giving them the power.
Yeah, I personally, I'm always very cautious of kind of...
Arming?
Well, the idea of like shooting on sight and things like that. That some people like, and it feels like very strong action. Mm. I think it's too extreme as how things are right now. So I think first we need to have people in the forest. We need to have patrolling. We need to have armed people who do the work. But the idea is not to just escalate. It's also to kind of deter the poachers. Make sure that that is not easy for them to come. That is not like for them, they just not difficult to access the forest. And I think once that we have this patrolling, it's going to have a very positive effect on poaching. Also, we often compare with countries like Nepal. Mm-hmm. But I think conservation is quite different. In Nepal, it's only within protected areas. But in Malaysia, we have a lot of forest still. And that makes things a bit more nuanced because many places have forest reserves, which have more complicated governance than just a national park. But I think we should look at this positively and then think about how much forest and wildlife we have and how we'll protect it.
Okay. All right. And Prof Chan, you know, I mean, what are your recommendations then to improve the situation currently? You know, I mean, what sort of initiatives would you like to see put in place?
I think the government is already moving in that direction, both the federal as well as the state government. Mm-hmm. Our water tariff is really, you know, heavily subsidized by government.
Yes.
So I think the time has come actually to revise the water tariff to make it at least at cost. At the moment, we are heavily subsidizing the people. And when the water is so cheap, nobody is paying any attention to reduce their water consumption. Especially now during the dry season, we are not getting enough water. Mm-hmm. So I think if the government were to revise the tariff constructively, then part of the increase in the tariff can be used to compensate Kedah in some way.
Okay.
Kedah themselves also, if they increase the tariff, revise the tariff, then they will get some income as well. So there's no need to keep on logging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to add to that, Ahimsa?
No, I think just it's time to protect Ulumuda as a as a conservation area, not as a forest reserve. And I think it's just a matter of getting on the table the different governments, both state level, the three states, as well as federal level. Mm-hmm. And all the stakeholders, I think the environmental NGOs are very committed to it. The academics are very, very aware that Ulumuda is a very precious place. So I think it's just a matter of finding the way that we work, finding that framework that we were talking about before. And, you know, it's time.
Okay, so we need a very concrete management plan in, put in place, I suppose. That would be the long and short of it.
Yeah, so then what we have been doing this year is to develop the vision and kind of a very, very general roadmap. Mm-hmm. But then our plan is to continue working and develop a more actionable plan, something that that can lead into the gazetting of Ulumuda in the short term.
Okay, so maybe the first step needs to be to just fully protect it, fully mm-hmm. gazette it, maybe make it into that national park. What do you say, Prof. Chan?
Yeah, not national park. I think most of the stakeholders prefer state park.
State park, because, sorry, my bad.
Yeah, when it's a national park, then state feel that they are losing control, you know, of the land. Mm-hmm. Even though the money to manage the park comes from national, because it's a national park. But I think state park would be the most preferred by most of the stakeholders. So let it be a state park.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, as usual, I always recommend people go to the forest, go hiking, you know, spend time outside. It's a lovely place to be. We were there the other day with a group of people. They had a great experience. And I think when people connect to nature, they value it more, and then we realize that we have fantastic nature, you know, in Malaysia.
Yes, because we're so disconnected, isn't it? And that's the problem. Yeah. Once we get that connection back, we'll understand the importance. And I suppose also once we start charging people for water, maybe they'll start taking it a bit more seriously.
Yeah. And at this juncture, we should like to say, you know, use water wisely.
Yes.
We are really in a desperate scenario now.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lita.
That was Professor Dr. Chan Ngai Weng, the president of Water Watch Penang, and Professor Dr. Ahimsa Campos Arthith, a professor in tropical conservation ecology and the principal investigator at the management and ecology of elephants, talking to us about Ulumuda. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.